This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Tattoos inspire strong reactions. Tattoos can be magical or menacing, spiritual or macho. Some people get them for their beauty, some for the power to shock. My guest, Don Ed Hardy, is a tattoo artist and historian, as well as a painter. He's been an important figure in the broader recognition of tattoos as an art form. He opened his studio in San Francisco in 1974. In 1986, he moved to Honolulu and began publishing books on the history of tattooing and the work of tattoo artists. He's also organized several exhibitions of tattoo art. He co-curated a show of tattoo designs called Pierced Hearts and True Love, A Century of Drawings. It's on view through November 11th at the Drawing Center in Manhattan. His own art is on exhibit in Philadelphia at the Janet Fleischer Gallery. He describes the images on his own body as a conglomerate collection of Western traditional tattoos and large Japanese epic mythological torso tattoos.
I have an image of a ghost on my back from an 1840s print by Utagawa Kuniyoshi, one of the most famous of the ukiyo-e school Japanese printmakers. I have two Buddhist protectorate gods, a male and a female, divinities on my ribs that were also done in Japan. I've got a little cartoon 1940s duck on my arm. It's my current favorite tattoo that I got on my last birthday from my son, who's also a tattoo artist. I have a Buddhist rosary tattooed on my wrist that was done in Japan. A whole variety of images. There's a lot of things. Some are just kind of goofy souvenir things, little memorial pieces.
How does the cartoon duck get along with the more spiritual images?
I think it fits right in. It's kind of a great Zen tattoo. I've got a woman's face on my right arm, kind of in the bend of the arm, with My Life is a Dream in Spanish, Mi Vida es un Sueño. And it's this kind of like beautiful, surreal, you know, semi-serious design. And then I had this space on my left arm that I've been saving for years. And this duck is pointing at himself and saying, "Who me?" It's called the Who Me Duck, and it was a very popular kind of kitsch tattoo in during World War II, and I've always loved it just because it's so dopey. So I think it's a great kind of sobering counterpoint to the, you know, grandiosity of some of the other stuff.
It sounds like you've turned your body into something of a museum.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you also feel that some of the images tattooed onto your body offer you any kind of protection almost.
Yeah, I think that essentially all tattooing is sort of psychic armor, whether it's acknowledged by the people wearing them or not. But I think that's a lot of the intent behind it, to make people feel stronger and better about themselves. And of course, it's just sort of a form of play, you know, dress up too. And I love my tattoos. I've never regretted getting them. I came into this thing very early in life and was just very attracted to it. So I think they're great. The only drawback to tattoos is that you do run out of space. It's not like collecting other
exactly.
things.
Exactly. So. Are you out yet?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not totally tattooed.
What's
I probably
left?
Never will be. So
what's left?
Oh, I've got a lot of space on my legs and kind of figure, like a friend of mine in the business says, well, it's like money in the bank, you know, having that open skin. So, you never know if you might want to find something that's, you know, seems like the right time to have something else put on.
Now, you've said that the process of applying a tattoo is so magical. The images have real power.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's magical and powerful about it?
Well, I think there's a lot of the fact that it is permanent and the fact that a person is making a great commitment when they decide to become tattooed and are dealing with social forces, either positive or negative, depending on your society. In our society, it's been so marginalized and has so many negative connotations that it's took a sort of courage or single-mindedness, I think, for people to decide to be tattooed. I think there's just kind of a lot of psychological energy that gets involved with that, and it's up to the artist to hopefully do their very best to transmit the kind of feeling that the person wants with the image, to make the process as easy as possible. And it's just a very key kind of a thing. I think that the doing of a tattoo, I was attracted to it. I got into tattooing ultimately from a fine arts background, and I was a printmaker, and I liked the finality of etching, of working on metal plates. But the finality of tattooing impressed me as a much more dramatic kind of art form. It was the most challenging medium that I could see.
What were the images that were popular when you started to get interested in tattooing? And you could tell us how old you were and what year that was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put us in a context.
Yeah, I was. I reconnected with tattooing. I really got interested in tattooing in 1955 when I was 10. My mm-hmm. best friend's dad had tattoos. I thought it was the greatest kind of picture making I'd ever seen, and I began investigating these tattoo parlors that were about 20 miles north of where I grew up in Southern California. And I was too young for anyone to teach me, so I had a little toy tattoo shop I was doing with colored pencils on neighborhood kids, and that went on for about 3 years, and then I gave it up because I was too young to really get an apprenticeship in a tattoo shop. So I reconnected in 1966 when I was 21. I was finishing my undergraduate work at the San Francisco Art Institute. And the images then, the only things available were very traditional Americana things, hearts, daggers, eagles, sailing ships, religious images, cartoons. It was an image bank that had become codified by about the 1920s and remained virtually unchanged. I was interested in that as a kind of an American folk art form that no one had really looked at closely. And as I approached it from that side and thinking, well, this is kind of interesting kitsch, and remembered everything I'd learned about it when I was a little kid, a tattoo artist actually showed me a book of photos of Japanese tattooing, which featured much more designs that fit the body, larger scale designs, and the imagery was so much more sophisticated and based on classical Japanese myths and ukiyo-e pictorial forms. And I thought I was so blown away by the possibilities of it as a medium, that's what led me to want to get into it. I thought, well, if they can do it there, we could certainly develop this as a medium here in the West.
You in fact, studied with a Japanese tattoo master in mm-hmm. Japan.
Yeah, I eventually was able to go. I began tattooing in 1966 and then really had my first professional shop at the beginning of 1968. And in 73, I was able to move to Japan and live there for about 6 months working with a traditional tattoo master. And it was an incredible experience because it's a very, very hermetic culture over there, very private.
What was his philosophy?
Basically, he saw himself as the heir to a great tradition, Japanese decorative tattooing. The current solid era of it goes back to about 1800. He thought that he was very much continuing the lineage, the artistic aesthetics of the 19th century printmakers and the great 19th century tattooers. He was still applying most of his tattoos with hand tools, basing his images on the woodcut prints of that era. And so he was very, very much aware of his place in history, of continuing as a repository of Japanese mythology and symbolism, a lot of things in the traditional arts that have really died out among most parts of that society.
You know, I think of tattooing in America as being associated with macho, you know, guys mm-hmm. at sea, guys mm-hmm. in prison, the mermaid on the muscle on your arm or the mermaid on your stomach, I mm-hmm. guess. So when mm-hmm. when you move your stomach, the mermaid moves, or, you know, a tattoo on a muscle on your arms, so when you flex your muscle, the tattoo moves. But it's a real macho culture. I bet that's not what it was in Japan.
No, it was in Japan.
It was macho?
I think it was very, and there again, it was very much done as for an amuletic purpose. I think traditionally mm-hmm. The firemen, who were very, very important figures, real neighborhood heroes in Edo and, you know, the old-time Tokyo, where all the buildings were paper and wood and fires would spring up and they were very serious business. So you'd have these fire brigades that were heavily tattooed and they would throw off their kimonos when they go to fight the fire and display these dragons and other kind of protective deities tattooed on them. And they were the great dandies of the town and, you know, very brave people. So it definitely has that connotation over there. In fact, there are very few women even today that are tattooed in Japan, which is not the case in the West. I think in the West now, certainly in urban centers, New York, London, Paris, and, you know, San Francisco and all that, women make up more than half of the clientele.
I've always thought of women's tattoos as having these very chauvinistic roots. I mean, the cliche is either a lovely little rose by a sexual part of your body, mm-hmm. Or a butterfly, mm-hmm. or, you know, on the other side, I guess this is from biker culture, the kind of Bob's Girl tattoo by
right.
your pubic hair or
right.
something,
right.
or on your behind. Mm-hmm. Do you find that women's tattoos are becoming less male defined like that?
Definitely. I think some of the most interesting and incredible, unusual creations that are being commissioned are on women and often by women tattoo artists.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to remember too that because tattooing has been so marginalized, that many of these cliches were only the most public, the most visible aspects, the tip of the tattoo iceberg of the kinds of people who were flamboyant enough to be strutting this kind of thing and, you know, basically loudmouth and whatever about their tattoos in public. So you get, you know, biker chicks and hog riding fools and then, drunken sailors and all that. And this has become the stereotype. But in fact, I think that all types of people have always gotten tattoos. It's just in the past they have felt more secretive about them, have felt ashamed of, have been made to feel ashamed of them, so that they tend to hide them, you know, so that someone coming back from, say, their career in the Navy, and maybe they got a few tattoos, they would go back to some small rural town, and the local people, you know, church-going people and all that, say, oh my God, this is awful, this is a barbaric mark. So instead of standing up for it and saying, yes, I got this. This was a sign of real bonding, of an experience that I went through. I did my military thing. We were under a great deal of duress. We were in the war or whatever. And being proud of it, they would say, oh, well, yeah, I was drunk and I shouldn't have gotten it. And they would succumb to those kind of mores that were, you know, endemic to their society at large. So a lot of the cliche things just simply weren't widespread, you know, true of the greater tattooed populace.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, though. I know you've looked at the history of tattoos a lot. Why has tattooing become such a part of culture at sea or prison culture?
I think, well, particularly in people that are in controlled communities and people that are in uniform, whether in penal institutions or in a military setting, it's a way of extreme individuation, of a way to assert yourself and say, well, they can put me in this uniform, they can give me the military haircut, they can make me talk the talk, but I can get the tattoo. And especially with seafaring people as well, when they were living, whether it was with merchant seamen in the old days on the wooden ships or, you know, modern-day sailors, living in extremely tight quarters where your possessions were very, very reduced, you know, you wouldn't have room for a collection of anything that would take up any space, but your tattoos aren't going to take up space, and they'll be with you. You know, it's a sort of mobile, it's like an epidermal diary, you know, of what has gone on in your life. And the tattoos themselves, again, in light of looking at tattooing, say, as a medium, as an art form, you can't consider it strictly in formal terms that you would apply to an inanimate thing that you would apply to a sculpture or a painting, because the tattoo is really just the entry point for the life story of the person that's wearing it. And this is what gives it its real, completes the circuit for a person to say, oh, you know, what an interesting tattoo, or what's that about? When did you get that? Maybe it's not even that great looking a tattoo, but it might have a great deal of meaning to the person wearing it because of the circumstances under which it was done, the person that applied it to them, the thing that it stood for, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Don Ed Hardy. He's a well-known tattoo artist and co-curated a show that's now in New York and Soho called Pierced Hearts and True Love, A Century of Drawings for Tattoos. Let's take a short break and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Don Ed Hardy. He's a tattoo artist who also co-curated a show of drawings for tattoos called Pierced Hearts and True Love, and the show is now on exhibit in Soho in Manhattan. I want to talk more about what it was like for you when you were getting started. You grew up in Southern California, and when you realized how interested you were in tattoos, you hung out at tattoo parlors. What was it like around those tattoo parlors then?
It was very much a typical kind of honky-tonk environment. These shops that I was able to visit were on the Pike in Long Beach. It was an amusement park established in the late 19th century. It was very much the Coney Island of the West Coast, and there were a lot of sailors. Long Beach was a great naval port in those days, and there were, you know, people on holiday, weekends especially. I'd ride the Greyhound up there. It was like a 30-minute ride. And people would come in and pick out tattoos off the flash on the wall. The shops were all quite busy, very brightly lit, very, you know, it was just kind of a honky-tonk amusement park atmosphere. It was very exciting. I thought it was incredible to be in these shops because the images on the wall were, you know, they were bright, they were dramatic, they reflected all these sort of encoded great, you know, emotions that certainly had a tremendous draw to a 10-year-old boy. It was like, wow, look at this stuff, you know, these really wild designs. So I just thought it was fascinating, and it definitely shaped my approach to art, you know, as I kind of went into the fine arts later in life.
There's a great set of pictures of you in one of your books, a book called Rock of Ages. And on the left-hand page, there's a picture of you standing in front of your Lutheran church, and you're wearing a robe and I think a little bow tie or
right,
something,
yeah.
Looking like quite the choir boy.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the opposite page is a picture of you, same age, I don't know, you look about 10 or something,
mm-hmm.
and you have this big tattoo on your chest. It's something that I think that was penciled on, that you penciled on, and
mm-hmm.
it's a Rock of Ages tattoo. But what a contrast between those two yous. You must have had a foot in two very different worlds.
Yeah, well,
I was
made to go to church. I mean, my mother really meant well, you know, and she did definitely give me a lot of great grounding in morals and values and all that. I didn't really buy the church party line, but you know, I had to do all that thing, and I just was so obsessed with tattooing. I would sit, you know, in church and draw these tattoo designs on the little programs, and I would request the hymn Rock of Ages because it made me think about being in Long Beach in the tattoo shop. And
yeah, what's the Rock of Ages image in tattoos?
It's this kitsch image that was really like a Courier and Ives style litho that was a religious lithograph that was very popular from, I think they started right around the mid-19th century up probably through the turn of the 20th century, and I think probably millions of them were produced. Found in all sorts of homes, and it was this image of a woman clinging to a big rugged granite cross in the middle of a stormy sea, usually with a sinking, you know, sailing ship in the background. And I could not find out who originated this series of images. There's actually a series of the woman coming out of the water and then being up hanging on the cross, and another one with two women in it. But I think possibly they were originated by a German artist in the 19th century, but it became a very standard tattoo back piece. The tattoo artist realized that this poster was exactly the right size to do as a back design, and someone got the idea to paint it up as such. So this was in the tattoo shop still when I was a kid. It was really, had sort of lost its popularity maybe from the 30s on, but I was just fascinated by it. I would draw versions of it, and again, because I was press ganged into sort of a, you know, this Lutheran upbringing, and so I was around a lot of crosses and stuff. So that was it.
So when you started to learn how to do tattoos, were you using the same process that you use now, or has there been an advancement in the technology?
There's a greater range of pigments, and there are some fine tuning adjustments to the machines and that, but essentially the process has stayed the same for, you know, this whole century.
Would you describe a little what the process is for those of us who don't have tattoos?
Yeah, it's a machine that's built pretty much like on the principle of a doorbell with two wire wrap coils and a circuit breaker, a little armature bar at the top. There's a series of very fine needles soldered onto a long bar that runs down through a pen-like kind of a tube that attaches to the power unit. And these vibrate up and down about 3,000 RPM. It runs off direct current, and you dip into the pigment and then draw that on the skin. And it's kind of akin to drawing with colored pencils or something. It requires, of course, a great sureness of hand. And then all the pigments, everything's thrown away at the end of the tattoo. Everything's single service now, of course. Everything's sterilized. We wear gloves. It's all the, you know, precautions are taken that any doctor's office would take.
And how deep do the needles have to go?
It's about a 32nd of an inch. It's into just the top of the dermal layer. So a lot of it, I mean, the machines don't really do the work on their own. It's very much up to the touch of the tattoo artist. It's a very sensitive thing. I think skin is an incredibly complex medium to work in because of the variables of it, person to person and one area of the body to another.
So how much of an issue is pain for the average person getting a tattoo?
I think everyone is concerned a great deal about it, although they don't really hurt that badly. It's very hard to equate it to something else. It's a surface burning sensation. I mean, it's not something you'd sleep through, but it's certainly not unbearable. Of course, some areas of the body, you know, center of your chest or on your spine or rib or a more protected area like that, it's more intense, but it's not that big an issue, really.
Mm-hmm. So the pain doesn't bother you when you get it done?
Well, it's not something I enjoy, but frankly, every time I get a tattoo, I think, oh, geez, I guess, didn't I have enough already? I sort of forgot these things hurt, you know, it doesn't go on for that long. You know, the tattoo might take 20 minutes, might take an hour, maybe an extreme thing you'd work for 2 or 3 hours, and it's bearable. And then, you know, then you have it. So you've got it there forever. So I think it's worth going through.
Were you ever in a jam where somebody was about to threaten you, and then they saw your tattoos and thought, well, here's a strange, eccentric guy. I think I'll leave him alone.
Actually, since I believe in the kind of, you know, the shock value of the tattoos, I used to go visit another friend that tattooed on the Lower East Side here in New York, and I was—he was on 4th between C and D, which is a pretty bad neighborhood. It certainly was in those days. I don't know how it is these days, but sometimes a cab wouldn't even take us in there. They'd make us get out a couple of blocks before because it was all drug dealers and burnout buildings and very threatening. So, just as a matter of course, I made sure I would roll up my sleeves and show that I wasn't just another, you know, dopey white guy walking in there with a big expensive camera, because I was always carrying my camera in to photograph his work and his drawings and all that. And actually, people would see the tattoos and they'd go, oh, you're going to see DeVita. You know, you're going to go down to the tattoo man, because he was known in the neighborhood. He was the tattoo man. And he sort of had this, you know, he was like the shaman's place. He was raised in the Lower East Side. He fit into the environment. But it is an icebreaker in a lot of cultures where they don't identify you perhaps from your perception as a certain race or a certain socioeconomic thing. It identifies you as a member of perhaps a larger, wacky international tribe, you know. I like that.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay.
Don Ed Hardy co-curated an exhibit of tattoo art called Pierced Hearts and True Love, which is currently on view at the Drawing Center in Manhattan. It'll tour over the next year to Miami, San Francisco, and Williamstown, Massachusetts. Our thanks to Michael McCabe, a consultant to the exhibit. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.